Join Mark and Molly Hemingway, Brian Wolfmiller, Rod Dreher, Jennifer Roback Morse, Scott Murray, and me for the 2017 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Registration is $120. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 10th and 11th in Houston.
And they won't ask me questions.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. There's a story in the New York Times about, but this doesn't sound like a big story, churches selling their houses of worship, although the New York Times points out that some of this property, this urban and inner city property, is very expensive real estate, perhaps some of the most expensive real estate in these cities. And one thing they don't explore is, well, at least very deeply, why. The explanation the New York Times gives is kind of boilerplate explanation, the decline of religiosity in urban centers and the inner city. There's more to it than that, I think. We're going to be talking about this story with Terry Mattingly. He's a regular guest, senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City, and he's author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
You say this New York Times story on inner city congregations looking to sell their houses of worship or some of their property is a big story. What makes it so big?
Well, for one thing, what makes it big is that it's not just one story. I mean, the New York Times alone, I would say over the last 5 years, has probably done 10 or 12 stories just about the sale of properties, the closing of churches, etc., within the Roman Catholic Archdiocese of New York alone. Then you go nationwide with this story, which is essentially the same thing is happening in every major urban zone in America, and even some that you wouldn't think of as urban. There was a story on this exact topic on the front page of the Knoxville News Sentinel here in the heart of the Bible Belt, in a city that consistently ranks in the top 5 to 10 most religious cities in America. The exact same story ran the other day. So just as a real estate story, with all of these properties, millions of dollars at stake, that alone is a coast-to-coast story in every major city, and it's happening several times a year. That's a big story. But then when you start throwing in the other things that are connected to it, part of which is you said, you chose to say, I'll pin that on you, that these involve churches relocating. The vast majority of these churches and synagogues and et cetera are not relocating, they're closing, which means that we have a large part of the American religious scene, we have exit doors going up, closing, as well as you have for sale signs going up. Let me give you an example of how this affects American life. You've heard me argue, yeah, for some time now, that one of the biggest religion stories of the last 50 years has been the statistical nosedive, some would call it demographic suicide, of the American world of liberal mainline Protestantism. I've argued for a long time that without the fading of the liberal mainline Protestant world, you wouldn't have had the gigantic opening in the middle of the American public square that evangelical Protestantism has moved up and seized. So do you think the rise of the religious right in American life is a pretty big story?
Sure it is.
Okay, how about this story? How about the declining number of Roman Catholic priests?
That's a probably bigger story.
I would actually argue the religious right and the fading of the mainland Protestantism is an even bigger story. But you see what we're arguing here? How big this is. The same demographic issues, shrinking parishes, declining numbers of children, some of the very factors that go in to closing Catholic parishes or I would argue, and I've heard Catholic priests and bishops argue this, are some of the same factors that have helped produce the clergy crisis. Well, then, let's just to give you another idea of how symbolic this can be. In the Episcopal Church here in the United States, you have several dioceses in parts of the country that are quite tiny. The Diocese of New Hampshire has made a lot of news in recent decades, primarily because of its election of the first non-celibate, openly gay bishop, which was a global story as well as a national story, a regional story, and a local story. But the Diocese of New Hampshire on a typical Sunday morning has about the same number of people in the pews as one average middle-sized Protestant megachurch. The whole diocese is now the size of a mid-sized congregation in other churches. In some parts of the Episcopal Church, we now have dioceses that are not just closing parishes, they're closing their cathedrals, which I think you would argue is at a completely different level of symbolism. One thing to close a small parish in a neighborhood somewhere in the inner city, it's another thing when you have to shut down your cathedral parish. Well, what happens then when you have to shut down a seminary? What does that mean? Well, a lot of people wouldn't connect all these things. They just see this as a real estate story. We have lots of old churches that are in neighborhoods that are changing, or you have some ethnic shifts, or you have maybe a few more religiously unaffiliated nuns move into the neighborhood, and you close a couple of parishes. What I argued in a post at Get Religion, what I've argued in multiple posts at Get Religion, is yes, this is a real estate story. Yes, that is a valid story. But why not look at all, or some, it would have to be a series, why not look at some of the related stories that are at the heart of religious questions facing religious groups in America? Why not admit that there is a faith element, a religious element in a story to churches and synagogues closing from one coast of the United States to the other? Sounds like a religion story to me.
So let's just talk about the, for a moment, the number side of it, which is going to be the one that usually attracts the media attention. We're not talking about any old real estate in some of these cases. We're talking some real estate, aren't we?
Well, when you look at historic churches in urban areas, you're often talking about some of the priciest land in any American city. You get five downtown churches closing in Boston, and you're in a place where you don't have properties open up very often. I don't need to say or tell you that even just the air rights above some of the core parishes in New York City, including parishes in Manhattan, can you imagine what that land is worth? In Washington, D.C., you've had a bunch of inner city churches close. Some of them have gone condo. In other cases, you have things turning into art galleries, bed and breakfast, pricey restaurants, bars, and wine-sipping establishments. I mean, the land is, if location, location, location is the trinity of the real estate business, a lot of these churches are sitting on precisely that kind of land.
Terry Mattingly is our guest. We're talking about a New York Times story about inner city congregations looking to sell their houses of worship. When we come back, the journalistic task of sorting out those religion angles. How do you begin?
Children are a heritage from the Lord, but what of those who've not been given the gift of a child? The cross of barrenness affects not only childless couples, it affects the family, friends, and pastors who love and care for them. I'm Katie Schuerman, and I'm partnering with Emmanuel Press to publish the second edition of my book, He Remembers the Barren, a story about the hope and contentment found only in Christ, no matter the cross we bear. Visit emmanuelpress.us to learn more. EMMANUELpress.us.
Emmanuel means God with us. God is with us at Emmanuel Lutheran Church and School at 1285 Main Street in Hamilton, Ohio, near Cincinnati. God is with us as we gather on Sunday at 8 and 10:45 a.m. for divine service. God with us in his word of forgiveness, with us in the waters of baptism, with us in the body and blood of Christ in Holy Communion, with us in the classrooms of our school and child care, serving children from age 3 to 8th grade. Join us for worship or enroll your child in our Christ-centered day school. Find us at emmanuelhamilton.com.
Who is the Holy Spirit? Will there be animals in heaven? How can parents raise Christian children in a hostile culture? This month, find faithful, Bible-based answers to tough theological questions when you subscribe to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod's flagship magazine, The Lutheran Witness. Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness to get 6 issues for only $6.99. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Have you been too busy to get your associate's, bachelor's, or master's degree? Concordia University, Wisconsin offers 50 online educational options. Find out more at issuesetc.org. Click the Concordia University online logo and enter the program code ISSUES to waive your application fee. Concordia University, Wisconsin is here to strengthen and support the church. Lifelong Lutheran learning. issuesetc.org and click Concordia University, Wisconsin online.
We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Do you have a student finishing up 8th grade at a Lutheran school? Do you wish there were a Lutheran high school close to where you live so your student could continue going to a Lutheran school? What if there was an opportunity for high school students in public or Lutheran school to take classes like Latin, logic, and hard-hitting theology courses? Well, there is. It's called Wittenberg Academy, the first completely online classical Lutheran high school. Visit our website, wittenbergacademy.org, to find out more.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Welcome back. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. We're talking with Terry Mattingly about a New York Times story about inner city congregations looking to sell their houses of worship. He is founder and editor of Get Religion. Folks, we are only 3 months away from the 2017 fall Issues Etc. Making the Case conference in Houston, Texas. The speaking lineup includes Mark and Molly Hemingway, Rod Dreher, Pastor Brian Wolfmiller, Dr. Jennifer Roback Morse, and Dr. Scott Murray. Attendance is limited to 400. Child care is free, courtesy of the Consortium for Classical Lutheran Education. Registration is $120. That includes 3 meals. You can learn more, and you can register by calling 618-223-8385 or at our website, issuesetc.org. The Fall Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 10th and Saturday, November 11th in Houston, Texas. Terry, the journalistic task here of sorting out the religion angles, the basic stuff that needs to be done, as you say, on part of at least one religion beat, if not two religion beat reporters, how do you deal with the monumental story here, story after story, city after city? Where, journalistically, do you begin?
Well, you could start just with a little bit of basic data entered into a software program, into a spreadsheet. You take one of these parishes in New York, or you take a major church in Chicago or wherever, and one of the things you do with a Catholic church is most of these churches also have schools. And one of the things you can do is look at a certain set of statistics. You can look at how many students were in that school, let's say in 1950, how many were there in 60, 70, 80, 90. You get the point. Every 10 years, you look at the size. The second thing you look at is what percentage of those students were Catholic. That's probably also in the records. Another thing is what percentage of the teachers in that school in each of those decades was a nun, a priest, or a brother in a religious order. You watch the transition from these schools being heavily identified with religious orders until they grow more and more and more secular, in terms of secular meaning non-clergy, non-religious. That's with a capital R, and the way the Catholics refer to priests and nuns and all as the religious. You watch the transition occur. The other thing that you probably have in the parish records is family size. Now you take this church and you chart the size of the families and the membership. And, of course, you know how obsessed I am with this other issue. It would also be interesting to chart the number of people coming to confession on each of those decade marks. And I bet if you put all of that into a spreadsheet, and then you do that with a couple of churches in different neighborhoods, I'll bet you would have some very interesting data come out of it. And if a religion writer looks at those patterns, I'll bet you they'll see doctrine and doctrinal and cultural changes in those patterns, as well as seeing just numbers on a spreadsheet and demographics. Now, in every single religious tradition, you might have different issues that come up. Not everything that's in a Catholic setting would affect a Jewish setting. In a Jewish setting, I'm sure you would want to look at family size. I'm sure you would also want to look at intermarriage rates, or try to find out the number of Jewish couples in that city that are entering into religiously mixed marriages, and that would be a key factor related to survival in the Jewish community. So once again, birth rate, family size, etc. Conversion. How many people are joining these churches by conversion to the Roman Catholic Church, by entering into Judaism through the door of conversion, even though Judaism is not an evangelistic religion? The other thing in the case of mainline Protestantism, where we're getting close to the world of mainline Protestantism having lost between 40 and in some case 50% of all of its members in the last 50 years, you have to try to find some way to chart the exit door factor and look at how these churches have done and relate that to some of the events in the denominations, some of the conflicts in the denominations, and in some cases, the creation of competing churches. I'm sure that someone like yourself, if you got a set of these statistics in parts of the Midwest and you put it on a chart of the decades, I'm sure you would immediately be able to spot some patterns related to Lutheran conflict and change. But there's so many other stories. I just filled up an entire notebook with stories that I link to this thing. Of course, for decades, you've had people say conservative churches are growing and liberal churches are shrinking. Well, that's true, and a lot of conservatives like to take comfort in that. But the Southern Baptist Convention is now beginning to realize that a lot of its churches are shrinking. Well, apparently, conservative doctrine alone is not enough. Pentecostal churches are growing worldwide. It's the fastest growing form of Christianity in the world. But there are also closing Pentecostal churches. Why does that happen? I wrote a list of three things that I would say are the hard realities of this game. And I'd like to discuss the Missouri Synod in this, because the Missouri Synod is having a lot of conversations about its lack of growth in some place. Hard reality number one, the talent in the pulpit matters. A lot of people want to say that it doesn't, but the simple fact of the matter is that in the United States, in an entertainment-driven culture, whether or not you have someone talented at that altar and in that pulpit, that actually matters. Hard reality number two, location does matter. Now, there are very successful urban churches, but the world is not full of inner-city megachurches. Suburban growth in American life has become a factor of life. It's something that has to be discussed. Hard reality number three, anybody that hangs around this subject for long hits a topic that nobody wants to talk about, which is that hardly anyone is reaching new people to their faith. Most church growth is pew shopping, with people once again hopping to the hot church, the hot youth group, the better school, the better preacher, or some other factor that if you talk to people, they'll talk about it pretty honestly. Or something happened in their parish that drove them out the exit door in a negative way. I could go on and on, but I better pause here. When Missouri Synod Lutherans discuss this issue, what are the topics that come up?
That's a very good question. Usually several. One of them is the birth rate. That's not a popular one because people don't want to admit that that doesn't have an easy solution nor a short or medium-term solution to it. So decisions, as a guest I interviewed a couple days ago, said decisions made decades ago are having their consequences today.
Well, and see, that also raises other painful subjects like cohabitation, divorce rates, late-forming marriages. I've seen plenty of stories documenting it also has to do with college debt, you know, in terms of when people marry and how long they delay their marriages. But go ahead, back to the Missouri Synod guys.
They also talk about, we would say, evangelism or outreach. And, you know, basically that's kind of browbeating, that we need to do more of that. That's the reason we are in decline. We haven't been doing, even though if you actually run the numbers, it wouldn't make up for the decline. Even if we were as evangelistic as, oddly, not even, we're actually, in terms of numbers, more evangelistic than even the Southern Baptists. They don't rate very well. But the one thing that I think many people just blame it on is kind of a general secularization of society, which seems more intense in the inner cities than elsewhere.
Well, that's the millennial neighborhoods, and that's the trendy hipster areas. And people that live in urban areas often don't like the local schools, so you have more families heading to the suburbs. It's easier to grow a church in minivan territory than in subway land, so to speak, and I'm not talking about sandwiches. When the Missouri Synod Lutherans argue about this, I bet this never turns into discussions of evangelistic, evangelical-style worship versus staid, traditional, hymnal-dwelling pew sitters, right?
Yeah, sarcasm duly noted. It always does.
I kind of heard that. But at the same time, those are two different forms of conservative doctrine, isn't it?
Conservative, very broadly defined, yes. But we don't want to get into that.
Well, we don't, except that part of the reason I always like to turn around on the Missouri Synod Lutherans is I think it's a fascinating example of people trying to wrestle, because they can't blame it on liberal versus conservative, because we really are dealing often with different forms of conservatism, kind of a lower church evangelical conservatism versus a higher church catechism, sacraments, chant-oriented conservatism. The fact that you can't blame it on left and right means that when you discuss this topic among Missouri Synod Lutherans, you're often driven to have to talk about some of the other subjects, because they can't just wave the left versus right banner the way you could say when Episcopalians get together and talk about church growth. You can imagine that there's a pretty strong liberal wing and a pretty strong conservative wing. And that conservative wing is John Stott, evangelical, Billy Graham crusade-backing Episcopalians, and the liberals are, pardon the stereotypes here, but gay and lesbian, embracing, tree-hugging, environmentalist, optional trinity. We say the creed sometimes with our fingers crossed, Episcopal. That's a broad doctrinal spectrum. And it's pretty easy for conservatives and liberals to yell at each other in that kind of a setting. I've always been intrigued with the some of the things, the research now that's going on among the Southern Baptist and the Missouri Synod Lutherans, because most of the time you can't just say, you can't just point doctrinal fingers and leave it at that. It's pretty clear to everybody that something's going on here other than people flinging the faith or attempting to redefine it.
There's a kind of, you say kind of a boilerplate explanation near the end of the New York Times piece that you had that doesn't really explain much. It simply says things as they are. What did you find there, and why is it journalistically insufficient to explain what we're seeing in urban churches?
Well, it's just a paragraph that could be written by real estate writers who've never met a religion writer or thought about any of this. You end up with something. I said that the folks at the Times probably have this on an auto insert button in a macro, and this, so that whenever they hit this part of the story, they just push that button and this paragraph goes in. Upward mobility, suburban growth, and the dissolution of traditional ethnic enclaves have all contributed to empty pews. Well, yeah, that's true. The issue is what else? Because in all of these areas, there are churches that are surviving. There are other churches that are thriving. And in the case of New York City, one of the most fascinating stories going on is that in the heart of Manhattan, you have churches that are booming, that are blowing the doors out. And some of them are ethnic, some of them are hipster, some of them are Bible-carrying Presbyterians. Some of them are Korean Presbyterians, but that's another issue. In other words, stop and think about this. Do you want to say that there are religious factors related to the rise and fall of religious groups or not? Because the minute you say there might be religious content in this story, as well as real estate content, upward mobility, suburban growth, and the dissolution of traditional ethnic enclaves, the minute you get past that and you say, well, what else? Why are some of these parishes producing nuns and priests? Why are some of them having to expand their schools and others are having to close? The minute you ask if there are any religious factors in there, this turns into a completely different kind of story. And it's time to call the religion writer in. And if you don't have one, you better go get yourself one and get yourself someone with experience, because this story isn't going away. We are going to have denominations either die or fade to complete irrelevancy in the next 20 to 30 years. We're going to have churches come out of nowhere and grow. We're going to have growing churches trying to buy the buildings of shrinking churches, and instead of selling them, the shrinking churches are going to sell their sacred spaces to Muslim groups to become mosques. That's already happening. Is that an interesting story? Well, at some point, you're going to need to talk about the religion part of this stuff.
In that vein, Terry, I was thinking when reading the New York Times piece that as a combination of several things you've mentioned here, this is prime location. That means it's also very expensive property to purchase. Let's just say an urban Episcopalian urban congregation that had a great place in Manhattan, a great location there in Manhattan. The congregation is dissolving. They sell the property to a local restaurateur who turns it into a restaurant. No kind of fledgling church will ever be able to buy that property back and make it into a church realistically.
Right.
So it's a zero-sum game in places like Manhattan, Chicago, Los Angeles, where the property values, once the thing is sold, are out of the price range of any religious community. And that means fewer churches in cities.
Fewer churches in the heart of these cities, where certain parts of the city's establishment is based and certain types of decisions will always be made. I think you've heard me a long time ago make a kind of sarcastic comment that the future of Eastern Orthodox Christianity in America will unfold in abandoned United Methodist sanctuaries. Well, in a way, that's because the Methodists were so successful and so mainstream and so huge that they built so many churches. The second thing is that their hierarchy has been more willing to talk to other religious groups about selling their sanctuaries to growing religious groups, including a couple of Orthodox churches, than, say, the Episcopalians have, who don't want to sell to the competition, or especially not the competition that might include a lot of their former members and their former priests, which is the case in Orthodoxy. The future of the United Methodist Church alone is a huge story. I feel to some degree we're going in circles, but the fact that we're going in circles is proof of how big and how complex this story is. And the fact that we're talking about subjects that we've talked about before shows how big this story is and how much it's not going to go away. So I keep pressing on this, and I keep writing about it at Get Religion for the simple reason that it matters. If you want to understand public discourse and the shape of the public square in American life, it matters whether you cover the religious element of this clearly religious story. If the New York Times leaves it at the level of real estate, it's never going to reach national public radio. It's never going to reach ABC, NBC, CBS, CNN, Fox, etc. The story is never going to get covered, and we'll just keep going decades and decades further into this shift without people ever having a chance to really talk about it.
Terry Mattingly, a senior fellow for media and religion at the King's College in New York City and author of the weekly On Religion column for the Universal Syndicate and the book Pop Goes Religion. He's founder and editor of Get Religion. Terry, thanks for being our guest.
Glad to be here.
We are going to get a pastoral perspective on the same subject, inner city congregations looking to sell their houses of worship, with Dr. Steve Shave right after this.
We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
Listen to what you want, when you want. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performance Fitness 618.com.